You are Locked On Timberwolves, your daily podcast on the Minnesota Timberwolves, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.
Welcome, 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 ladies and gentlemen, to another Locked On Wolves podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. As always, your host here, Colt Molesky, and joined by Dane Moore today. He is fresh off the road. He was with Tim Fakeless in Cleveland and Chicago, traveling with the Timberwolves, and then they were back here playing the Kings the other night. And they've had a rough go of it the last few games. They've had some tight ones. A couple situations, again, where they played, I feel, down against some poor competition in Chicago and Sacramento. And they got the win against the Kings, an unfortunate loss versus Chicago. We'll get into all that. But first, Dane Moore, thanks for joining the show.
Yeah, man, thanks for having me. It's been an interesting week, I guess, for the Timberwolves. Is this the worst run of three games of the whole year?
I would feel comfortable saying so, just because Cleveland, it happened before the trade. That's still a down team. You hope that they can beat Cleveland before the – now they look pretty good, but before they made all the moves at the trade deadline, you hope that they can beat that Cleveland team. And then Chicago, obviously we know how they have played, and they were able to get the win the Bulls were over the Timberwolves without Chris Dunn, one of their primary playmakers. And then they almost blow it against the Sacramento Kings, another team that's been pretty abysmal this season. All really rough showings for the Timberwolves. What have you made of this last – you've been around the team for – you've traveled with them. You've been around the team the last about a week now. What's the sense you get from the team? Are they just in a funk, or are these just a couple of games where teams really got up against them? What's going on?
Yeah, I would say that Kings game has to be shocking. Just, I think anybody who watched that, there was a lack of energy from Jimmy Butler through kind of the whole bench. They weren't energized, and I would say that is a product of how they played in Cleveland and Chicago, or the result of the way in which they played. It was eerie in both of those locker rooms after the game, just kind of silence. And after any loss, it's quiet. But really, the Cleveland loss hurt because it's an overtime buzzer beater, and it was a game that slipped away because the Wolves didn't execute down the stretch. And then obviously that Chicago game has some extra value in it too, and they blew that there too. So the team came off that road trip just really, really devastated, and I don't know, drained. It had to have been draining. I don't know. They're normal humans too. It's a Sunday night. They wanted to like be home and like watching Netflix or something, and they had to go play basketball. That's what it looked like to me. But I do really think it was a product of that trip and just some natural fatigue.
No, yeah, and You mentioned it, but the way they lost to Cleveland too, those are harder to bounce back from than I think people realize. I wanted to get into a little bit of the Bulls game, a little bit of the Kings game. I also wanted to get your take on the deadline, just because so much activity happened. It was a really exciting deadline, a really fun time to be on Twitter as well and be part of the NBA Twitter, and to be following everything. It was a fun trade deadline. Want to get into all of that. First things first, monster game from Zach LaVine. And I actually talked with a number of people about this, and I've been defending Wiggins for, what has it been, 3 days now? A lot of people after that game have talked to me and said, so, would you take LaVine? Would you put Wiggins in the Butler trade and keep LaVine? And I think that's an instant reaction to the game. But I did want to pose it to you. Does it look like the Timberwolves were a little hasty in getting rid of LaVine? I'm not saying that they should have gotten rid of Wiggins, but I'm just saying, on its face, does it look like they were a little hasty getting rid of LaVine?
No.
This is what I said. Back me up here.
Go ahead.
LaVine is always going to have electric, exciting offensive games. He's always going to have those, but he also has down games. He has games where he's missing shots. He cost the Timberwolves a lot of games the last season in the fourth quarter because he wanted to take all the shots. He hurt their offense in the fourth quarter. They're a better fourth quarter team offensively when he was injured for that stretch last season than when he was healthy. And Wiggins is going to be, I think Wiggins is always going to be the better defender. If Wiggins can continue to improve on the progress that he's made this season, he's always going to be the better defender than LaVine. And so you're just giving up some explosive games. And he had a great game against the Timberwolves because there was a little bit of that revenge factor. But this is not the consistent player that you want, especially if you're trying to actually build a team that's going to be a playoff contending team with Butler and with Towns. So I would definitely keep Wiggins. I would definitely say that it's an instant reaction to LaVine's big game as opposed to the right decision to stick with LaVine. That said, he's a really fun player to watch. So I understand some fans not wanting to see him go, but this was the move to make, especially because it got you Jimmy Butler.
I think I'm with you, and it's really, for me, it comes down to Zach LaVine, and I don't know if we'll ever be able to do anything on defense except for be one of the very worst, and I think we've seen Andrew Wiggins progress to some degree on that end. But I do think there are reasons to consider Zach LaVine. I guess I wouldn't say that that's totally ridiculous, and I think those advantages might be as mental makeup with Zach LaVine. I think we've seen that's very different than Andrew Wiggins. I mean, if you watched the game against the Kings last night, Andrew Wiggins was, I mean, it was different than a game against the Cleveland Cavaliers or Toronto Raptors, put it like that. And I think you, with Zach LaVine, you have a player who is, you know, just has a much more of a love for the game. And I do think that's important. Not necessarily to take away from Wiggins, but LaVine more so. And maybe that helps foster greater development for him. The one thing is just like the salary cap dorky thing, but you wouldn't have had to give Zach LaVine a maximum contract extension like you did to Andrew Wiggins, who's now going to be making close to $30 million a year for the next 5 years. Zach LaVine didn't sign a contract extension this summer because he tore his ACL, and now he's going into this summer as a restricted free agent. And, you know, the contract he signs will probably be worth half as much as Andrew Wiggins. I would guess he probably signs for around maybe $15 million a year. I guess he's young, but this Lou Williams contract kind of sets a little bit of precedence, and he signed a three-year $24 million contract. Yeah, he's a lot older than Zach LaVine, but this market is really going to be crunched, and the Wiggins contract was already an overpay, and now with the way that the market seems to be correcting itself, I think that deal starts to stick out even worse. And so I think you could frame an argument to say that having Zach LaVine as the third player alongside Townsend Butler makes sense, not even because he's a better player, but because he will have a much smaller contract going forward, which could, in theory, leave the team some more options so as to add a fourth piece, because right now, with the way the Wolves are going to have to move going forward, it's going to be Karl Towns, Jimmy Butler, Andrew Wiggins, if Butler re-signs, for max contracts, and then you're going to be filling in with pretty much veteran minimums and mid-level exception type players, which is really thin, and it would have been a little bit different if Zach LaVine was here.
Here's the ultimate bottom line, and it doesn't have anything to do with these two players, really, is that the Timberwolves were everybody except Towns and Wiggins was on the trading block, and to get Jimmy Butler, as long as you don't trade away the franchise, which would have been Towns, you give them pretty much whatever they want. So they wanted LaVine, they wanted Chris Dunn. You're fine giving up those guys as long as it's not your two franchise guys and Wiggins and Towns, and you do what you got to do to get a guy like Jimmy Butler. That's the bottom line.
Yeah, I that's not how I think about it, but I get what you're saying, and
He's a superstar who plays two-way basketball,
yeah.
And you
secured
it. Yeah,
I think I don't think it was a bad trade at all. I guess those are kind of different questions to me. Whether you're looking at Andrew Wiggins or or Zach LaVine specifically, or if you're looking at the trade as a whole. I didn't think we were looking at the trade as a whole. The trade as a whole is a coup for the Wolves because they have Jimmy Butler and are having a very good season. With Jimmy Butler, he's completely changed the culture. So it's a win, and the trade would still be a win if it was Andrew Wiggins instead of Zach LaVine, is what I guess I'm saying.
I think Jimmy Butler changes the franchise either way. But it was just clear that Minnesota didn't want to trade Towns or Wiggins, so everybody else was kind of up for grabs at that point for Minnesota. So it makes sense why they let him go. And I still like Wiggins in this scenario, and I still like him on the Timberwolves. Going out to the entire game. The Timberwolves got in a little bit of a back-and-forth battle late in this one. What was your takeaways just from the loss to Chicago? Very tight game late. It came down right to the wire. Is it disappointing for this team to lose to Chicago, even though they're off the game against Cleveland and off a tight loss to Cleveland? And you talk about fatigue. Is it still disappointing at the end of the day to lose to Chicago the way they did?
Oh yeah, that was one of the most frustrating, you know, games from an execution standpoint I've seen. I think they got up to a 17-point lead in the third quarter, and then it was the classic one team's trying harder than the other. And I mean, from loose balls to rebounds, the Bulls just kind of, you know, they didn't quote unquote give up. And one thing that Taj Gibson's kind of been saying every time after these games when the Wolves have. That now the numerous times the Wolves have blown out or have had a 20-point lead and then blown the lead is he's like, we don't have this ability to like step on the opponent's necks. They tend to get comfortable we tend to get comfortable. This is Gibson talking, and it kind of lets the other team back into the game. And then sometimes the Wolves still close it out, but then sometimes they let them back in the game, and it's a new game at that point. And it was interesting. I was watching the Toronto Raptors and Charlotte Hornets yesterday afternoon, and it was kind of the same thing. It was like the Raptors are up by 15 in the third quarter against Charlotte, not a very good team. And I was like, huh, I've seen the Wolves in this situation many times. And then I've seen the Wolves nosedive from there. But the Toronto Raptors, like, they just stayed on for like three more minutes and blew it up to a 25-point lead. And it's like the Wolves don't have that. Like, they don't see blood in the water and jump on it. It's kind of when they get these leads, they tend to get comfortable. And I think you definitely saw that against Chicago on Friday night. And then the end of game is just getting really frustrating how Jimmy Butler centric it is. And I know that there were these games at the beginning of the year where Butler was kind of carrying the team down the stretch. You think about that one Oklahoma City game. But the opponent seems to know that, okay, there's under a minute left, Jimmy Butler's shooting it here, or this all runs through Jimmy Butler. And Karl-Anthony Towns is just being, like, it's male practice how few touches he's getting, like, whether it's the end of the game or just throughout the game. He's not shooting enough. Right? This is one of the most dynamic offensive big men in the league, and they're not finding... Not finding ways to go through them. And I understand a big guy, it's harder to, particularly under a minute, to kind of find ways in which to feed him. You can't just really isolate him. You can't just be like, all right, 1-4 low, pick and roll for Towns. Like, no, Towns isn't a ball handler. Like, you got to find a way to give it to him. But I would just like the offense to a lot more frequently just start with a high ball screen where Towns comes up and sets one for Butler or sets one for Jeff Teague. Because then he's guaranteed to be in the play, and every time he can pop off that and something can happen, he can get more touches. It's getting ridiculous how difficult it's become to feed Towns in the post. And Tibbs says, like, before and after every game, whenever he's asked about Carl's few touches, he's like, the game dictates your shots. If you double teamed, you got to pass out of it. And that's not even what I see happening is the issue. It's like they're not even giving him the ball in the first place. They're not even giving him the ball in the to have the opportunity to be double-teamed. He's just clearly not even, like, the second option on this team. And
well, you think, too, with how athletic he is, just, you mentioned it, just simply a pick and roll with Butler and Towns, where Towns picks somebody and then he just rolls right to the basket. You think that would be money at least 8 times a game by itself?
You would think.
And that's how many shots he took total against Chicago.
Counterfactual here. So the Wolves have been pretty awful lately, right? They were 5-8 going into that Sacramento game, now 6-8 in their last 14. They have the 29th defense over that chunk of time. It's been their worst. It's been their worst, like, 14-15 game run of the year. Because 29th in defense is really bad. But you know that the Wolves are second in offense over that time? They're leanest stretch of the entire year. They're still second in offense. So I find myself having these frustrations or seeing things happening and such. And then I'm like, well, you know, at the end of the day, they're scoring at a very high rate. So maybe I'm wrong. I don't know. I guess it's possible that I'm wrong, but it's hard to watch a game and see a player like as offensively skilled as Karl Towns and have him not seeming from the eye test to be as involved as would make sense.
Yeah. And the other thing, too, that I took away from this game is Teague was not the better point guard out there, and Grant was the other point guard, which is a big problem. Which is a big we don't have time to get into it right now, but that's a big problem because we got to talk about the Sacramento game. But that was a big problem. We're going to take a quick break for our sponsors before we break down the Sacramento Kings game against the Timberwolves. It wasn't pretty. It wasn't necessarily the game you want to see the Timberwolves play against Sacramento, a team down as Sacramento, but they did win against Sacramento the other day. 111-106, Timberwolves win at home. Was this just kind of almost a desperation? We have to beat this team, so we did what we had to do, and now we got out of this awful stretch. Hopefully we can reboot. Or do you hope that this was a win that could turn things around? It didn't seem like this was one of those wins. It seems like they got out of a rough stretch with a tight win against a bad team, and now hopefully they can reset here.
We got to start this whole conversation with understanding the concept that the Sacramento Kings team is not only the worst team in the NBA, it's one of the worst basketball teams in the NBA probably over the past 5 years. They looked somewhat capable in that game, but watching Sacramento play is a train wreck. If you were listening or watching the broadcast on the game last night, quickly after the Kings' first bucket and Bogdan Bogdanovic got their bucket and Jim Peterson goes, "That's their best player," and
rough.
That's a red flag. I like Bogdanovic. He's maybe like the 8th best rookie in the league this year. So that's great, but it's not good if the 8th best rookie in the league is your best player. And Sacramento has the worst offense in the league and the second worst defense in the league. Those type of teams don't come through often in the NBA. And then so to play them at home is a game you got to take care of business in. And at the end of the day, the Wolves did. They won the game, but it does really feel like we're getting to this point that the Wolves look at who the team is on the schedule and they play differently given whatever the narrative around that team is. That can be good when they're playing the very good teams. So maybe Tuesday against Houston, there's a little more energy. But this Wolves team is clearly playing up and down to the competition or the narrative of the game.
Mm-hmm. And, too, you talked about the Timberwolves defense earlier. 106 points to the Sacramento Kings. I think that just speaks more to the effort that they're putting forward. I think that they just know that their offense is good enough to beat a team like the Kings, and so they don't really worry as much about the defensive effort that they're put forth, especially in the second half of the game. And it's not a great sign for a team you hope can do things in the playoffs.
Absolutely, yeah. And defensively, you can't be getting taken advantage of by Kostas Koufos. And I mean, there's just these very average players that are you know, coming out and really competing. And, you know, to Kupis's credit, he played hard. And De'Aaron Vaux played hard. But again,
he's the pride of the Buckeyes, after all.
in the grand scheme of the NBA, these are below average players.
Yeah.
And, you know, and you got to kind of square those guys up and say, you're not going to beat me. And I know that's a very, like, simplistic mindset, but there just isn't that night in, night out focus. And I found it very frustrating in that. Again, in that third quarter, seemed really lean, and you just had Kosta Kupis doing work, and that, like, grabbing rebounds over Andrew Wiggins because Wiggins didn't box out, and, you know, and getting buckets, Bogdanovich, De'Aaron Fox. I mean,
De'Aaron Fox looked like a stud on offense, and he has struggled mightily on that side of the floor.
Yes, and this is, like, somewhat tangential, but he is such a bizarre player. Like,
yeah,
where he'll have the one amazing possession followed by two out of control possessions. Amazing. I mean, I know maybe in overall for the season, De'Aaron Fox hasn't had a great year, but I do like that player.
No, I definitely do as well, especially because I think that he could be a really great point guard defense. Because so many point guards you see, they're amazing on offense, but I think he could be really special on the defensive side. He's one of those guys, when I watch him play, I really wish he had ended up on the Spurs just to see what Pop could. Because with that defense and with the shot doctors that they have in San Antonio, I think they could help him with his shot. And I think that Pop could put him in a real position where his defense is pretty lethal. Just like Murray for their team, how they have made him look really great on defense. I think that they could really do some fun things with De'Aaron Fox's defense, and I think they could fix his shooting.
Did you watch, Colton, did you watch the Warriors-Spurs game on Saturday night?
I did not, unfortunately.
The Spurs, I don't want to say the Wolves are the class of the Spurs, but that's the next team ahead of them in the standings, of course. And that team has been just ravished by injuries and is playing, they're basically playing Sacramento Kings type players around, like, LaMarcus Aldridge. And that team is consistently amazing for how well they can compete given the lack of talent that the Spurs have. The Wolves are, like, multiple levels of talent ahead of the San Antonio Spurs. Like, it's not close. And without Kawhi, I'm talking about without Kawhi.
Yep,
but,
yep.
You know, you would like to think that this Wolves team, you know, if we wouldn't have had the past couple of weeks, could have really, if they would have stayed on that path that they were on the previous month, really had made some noise and gone for the third seed. This Spurs team is, while they're great, they have a great coach and they execute well, they did seem like they could fall to the four seed and the Wolves could jump on the three seed, but I don't know. Now the Wolves, like, this is negative, but you look at the standings and the Pelicans, who are the ninth seed out of the playoffs, only have two more losses than the Wolves. I'm not suggesting the Wolves are falling out of the playoffs because, again, I think they have the talent. The offense has been good.
Mm-hmm.
But more of these lackadaisical effort games, and we're talking about falling down to maybe the sixth seed, seventh seed, like that's dangerous. They're not beating the Rockets. They might not even get a win in the playoffs if they play against the Rockets. So they really, it's time to stabilize.
Well, and let's just remember, if Oklahoma City somehow stabilizes and they've played up and down all year long, if they can somehow find some sort of balance, they're only a few games behind the Timberwolves, and they're right there waiting to pounce as well. So it's not just teams like New Orleans or Denver that you have to worry about, teams that have been struggling or have injuries. Like, Oklahoma City is just a few games away from really jumping on the Timberwolves and knocking them out of that fourth spot, and that's not out of the realm of possibility by any stretch.
No, that team scares me, particularly in a playoff matchup with the Wolves, and I'm sure you and I have talked about that before, but that would be not a good matchup for the Wolves if that was like the 4-5 matchup if the Wolves could somehow evade the Thunder. That would be good. I wouldn't be surprised to see the Thunder rattle off like 8 or 9 straight wins at some point here before before the season ends. And if that happens at the same time as the Wolves even go 500, go like 4-4, 5-5 or something, that they could definitely, pass up the Wolves here. And I think that might be the difference in the 4-5 matchup is if it is the Wolves and the Thunder, who has home court advantage would be huge there.
Oh,
and speaking of 9-game winning streaks, don't sleep on the Utah Jazz, man. Those guys might eke their way into the playoffs too. Shout out to Ricky Rubio, who's doing things.
After they traded away some pieces, mm-hmm. and they're gonna, they should have just kept Derrick Rose. They could have been just driven into the playoffs by the shoe salesman.
Oh God, Your Honor, should we talk about that?
We'll get to the trades after our second break here. All I can say about the Timberwolves right now is that All-Star break cannot come soon enough. Mm-hmm. It cannot come soon enough.
Maybe that's what they need. Maybe they just need a little bit of a break here. They got Houston at home. They got the Lakers at home. If they could somehow beat the Rockets, and then they should beat the Lakers at home.
Want them to beat the Lakers.
Yeah, just the Lakers. They're not beating the Rockets.
Just beat the Lakers, please. Just beat the Lakers by 20 points. Get to the All-Star break. Reboot during the All-Star break. Mm-hmm. That's what I'm really hoping for. I'm just really hoping that this is a young team that has gone through a ton of change and gone through a lot of culture stuff that's been different in the last year. A lot of change, a lot of turnover in the roster, and they just need a little bit of a reboot in the middle of the season here, and I'm hoping that they can come out strong after the All-Star break. We're going to go to a second break, and then we're going to talk about some of the stuff that happened for the trade deadline over the weekend. It wasn't just basketball on the court stuff. There's a lot of exciting stuff that happened at the trade deadline. We'll get to that after their sponsors. The Cleveland Cavaliers have mustered a whole new roster pretty much, and I really like the moves they made. I really liked a lot of the stuff happening around the trade deadline. I want to hear first, though, Dane, what were some of your instant reactions to the things happening on the trade deadline?
Well, okay, so are we looking at it as a move-by-move thing or as a whole? Because I think as a whole, as a whole it was good.
Yeah, when you look after the trade deadline was done and you just look at the day that we had, what was the reaction to that?
I thought the Cavs had a great trade deadline. I think some people would nitpick at the giving up the first round pick to take back Larry Nance and Jordan Clarkson, particularly when you see Jordan Clarkson makes $13 million next year and $14 million the year after that. In my opinion, he's probably like a $10 million a year type of player. But Larry Nance is on a rookie scale contract, and so I think the price of getting Larry Nance was a first round pick, and they got him, and really at the end of the day, what this team needed a shake up. I know that's like a kind of a blanket statement, but they looked shook it up, and against the Celtics, that was really impressive. I think to get back Rodney Hood, just for Jay Crowder, essentially,
that was a great get.
Yeah, I mean, you want to talk about it from the Wolves' perspective? I wish the Wolves could have some like what the price that Hood got given up for. I would have loved to see the Wolves have made a move to have Hood be on that same role on the Wolves, but. Yeah, this Cavs team is different, and I don't want to overreact to one game against the Celtics,
mm-hmm.
but you got to think that the Cavs had no like connectivity prior to the trade, and so a lot of people are like, well, it's going to take a while for these new guys to learn how to play together. Well, the old guys didn't know how to play together, so that was gonna happen no matter what. So I think. I'm going to be on like permanent league pass alert for Cavs games. I'm really interested to watch that team play because I think, even before the trade deadline, for me, I was pretty firmly in the boat that I think the Raptors were the best team in the Eastern Conference and thought that they not only will would get the one seed in the East, but would win the East and go represent the East in the NBA Finals. And now it's really close. I think I could see it being the Cavs, Celtics, or the Raptors all coming out of the East. And I think the playoffs are going to be fun in the Eastern Conference. You can't ever sleep on a LeBron-led team. He's the best player on any of those teams, of course. But if the rest of those dudes can you know, insulate LeBron, then that Cavs team has to become the favorite. But like, I don't know. The Raptors have just been so slept on this season, and I think they're terrific. I love watching that team play. It reminds me of the Spurs, the year they most recently won the championship. I'm not suggesting the Raptors are going to win the championship, but just the way that they go like 10 deep of guys, and they don't lose a beat. I think that Raptors team is still in my mind ahead of this Cavs team. I need a little bit more information on the Cavs, though.
Yeah, and that I had a buddy text me if the Cavs were the number one seed after they beat the Celtics. And that was my response, too, is are we really just going to forget about the Raptors? They've been decimating teams this season, and they have looked really good, and they're a really deep roster. But that said, I did really like the moves that the Cavs made. I thought everybody and their mother knew that they were going to go for George Hill. I really liked that they were able to pick up some guys, Nance and Clarkson. I was really surprised they got Rodney Hood. I love that get for them. I love Rodney Hood as a role player and somebody to slide in, especially with the way he's had some great games shooting from outside. I thought for sure that was a guy that somebody like the Wizards would go for, especially with John Wall out. And so for the Cavs to get him, I thought that was a really big get for them. What did you think of 2 3-team deals in the same day as well? That was pretty impressive.
No, trade deadline's the best day.
It is.
That
it
and the
really
first
is.
Day, the first day of free agency. If you love the NBA, like those 2 days, you got to take those days off of work and just constantly be refreshing like Woj and Shams' page. And it's if you love the fantasy basketball element of the NBA, it's so fun. And I think a lot of people rip on the Cavs, but man, the Cavs make the NBA fun, and particularly at the deadlines, they make it interesting. And I had a blast living on Twitter that day and kind of just waiting for the next shoe to drop constantly. It's fun. This is not related to the trade deadline, but this news just broke that the Timberwolves have recalled Justin Patton to be up with the big club, and I think that'll be interesting kind of going forward. I wouldn't think he would be in the rotation, but to have him with the team is maybe that implies he could get some minutes. I'm not sure. That'll be interesting to talk to Tibbs about at practice today.
I'm a big Patton fan, so I would love to see him start to get a couple minutes. I think that he
but
could
where?
Be.
But
I have no
I'm not
I have no idea. Hopefully it's in a blowout game to the Lakers.
Yeah, okay.
Hopefully that's the case where he can just get a ton of minutes because they're winning by like 20 points against the Lakers. But other than that, I don't know how he could get any minutes. What did you think of Emmanuel Mudiay going to the Knicks?
Yeah, I think that was interesting. I mean, what were the Grizzlies doing? They could have got him or anything.
For Tyreek Evans.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I didn't watch that Moutier's first game, but kind of saw some clips and stats and seemed like he was impactful, kind of maybe the classic guy that needed a new opportunity, and he'll have that there, and particularly the Knicks not having Porzingis will give him a little bit more of an opportunity to carry a higher usage. But, yeah, I mean, those guys, he's 21 years old, like, plenty of time to define himself still in the league. And yeah, the Knicks give him an opportunity.
They definitely need to move on from Jack as the guy who was their scorer for Frankie Smokes being just the defensive point guard. That was never going to work long term.
Absolutely, yeah. I don't know. That team still remains pretty messy. But yeah, no, it was good to see Moutier. It was to be a point guard moved at the deadline. The real point guard that I'm scared that was moved at the deadline, though, is Derrick Rose, who was moved to the Jazz and cut.
Please, Timberwolves, don't do it. Please.
So that'll be at – he is eligible to be signed somewhere at 4 p.m. Central Time today. So maybe by the time somebody's listening to this podcast, Derrick Rose could very well be headed towards Minnesota. And, you know, I try and not label things as totally bad or totally good. I think sometimes we can overreact to some narratives around the Timberwolves. I think, like, maybe say the minute distribution at the beginning of the year, playing the starters too much, you know, that kind of like spurred a fire. But I think it kind of proved that they were, that was a product of some injuries and Shabazz leaving the rotation. And what I mean by that is it was like explainable to some extent and kind of stabilized once the Bielitsa came back. If Derrick Rose is traded for, I can't really find positives in why that would be, because it's going to take away from Tyus Jones and maybe Jeff Teague. And those are just, at this point, really seem to be two better point guards than Derrick Rose. If Rose came in and he was just Aaron Brooks, you know, the third point guard on the bench, sure. And maybe he could step in if somebody was injured or foul trouble or something like that. I guess I'd be fine. But my fear is that he'll be signed and immediately start getting minutes. And I don't know how Derrick Rose minutes can be better than Jeff Teague or Tyus Jones minutes.
That was a very calm, measured response. And I've had
some time to like chill out a little bit.
I appreciate you being a measured professional. I'm not going to be a measured professional because I've thought about this and it still makes me upset that this is a possibility. The biggest problems that people have with the team that has been built and is taking the floor right now is that they were worried about shooting. They were worried about how everybody would get enough shots. Then there was complaints that Teague was getting too many minutes over Tyus Jones, or that Tyus Jones was stealing minutes from Teague. Then there's complaints that Towns isn't getting enough shots. Towns needs to have more shots. And now you want to throw in a guy who is definitely going to need more shooting to make himself effective, not to mention that he's not exceptionally great at anything defensively. And throw into that, this is a guy that left his team twice. Twice he left two different teams just without giving any explanation to the team. He just left the team in the middle of a season to go take care of stuff that he deemed more important than his job, which is basketball. And now you want to put him on the team with Butler, who has already been running guys like Towns over the coals in the beginning of the season because they weren't playing defense. You want to throw that guy in the locker room and have him taking away more shots? What is Towns going to shoot, like three times a game if they'd signed Derrick Rose? Why would they ever do this? There's no reason for this. Even if Teague gets an ACL injury today in practice, you still start Tyus and you don't sign Derrick Rose.
It's hard to argue. It's the Bulls angle, and it's the having played for Tibbs angle.
Oh gosh, Derrick if that Rose gets him on this team, you're gonna have to find me for tomorrow's show. I don't know where I'll be, but come find me, Dame, please, because I'm gonna.
Yeah, it's gonna be messy, I guess. And this is me like reaching for things, trying to grab something positive. But you look at what the other quote unquote Tibbs guys have brought to the team, and it's been positives. And I think that's because Jimmy Butler and Taj Gibson can still play. But to some extent, it's a knowledge of the system, and it's a comfort with Tibbs that has made maybe more particularly Taj Gibson like kind of rejuvenate himself a bit. And maybe some of that comfort with Tibbs will translate for Derrick Rose. And I by no means am suggesting it would bring him back to any sort of level that he was at when he was in Chicago pre-injuries. But maybe the Wolves get a better Derrick Rose than we've seen in Cleveland this year or in New York last year. But even at the end of the day, is an improved Derrick Rose better than Tyus Jones for this team?
No.
Probably not, because you don't need it. This team doesn't need another isolation scorer. So, I don't know. Rose would really need to embrace not being a primary scorer, primary option on the team, even with the second unit, he'd be taken away from some of those guys who have been finding success. So yeah, I'm reaching, but I'm hoping and leaning on the knowledge that Tom Thibodeau is smarter than me and smarter than all of us, and hopefully he's not jaded by, you know, personal relationships and by living in the past. But Tibbs isn't a dumb guy. Let's hopefully have some faith in him. It hasn't happened yet. And if it has, let's holster the pitchforks until we see it totally burning down.
If they sign him today, you're going to have to come find me. You're going to have to come help me. You're going to have to drag me out of the gutter, because I'm going to be in a bad spot. I'm going to be in a real bad spot, because I would be all sorts of upset if they – even the one thing that I was making argument for at the trade deadline was, if the Wolves make a move, it should be for 3-point shooting, and he wouldn't even give them that.
He would not. He really,
there is no upside. I know you've been doing a great job, ever the professional, Dane Moore, trying to paint this with a positive light and find the silver lining. There is no upside to this signing. There's no upside to this signing. This will happen purely because he is a Chicago alum.
Totally. So Derrick Rose played 64 games last season, and he was healthy for those, you know, those 64 games, and he played, and he made 13 three-pointers last year.
Oh, dear 13. God have mercy. Oh, Lord.
Total. 13 out of 60. That's 21% from three. So if what you're looking for is a 3-point shooter, you are not getting that in Derrick Rose. And don't get carried away by the fact that he averaged 18 points a game, because points per game is not a good reflection of impact on the game.
What was his player efficiency?
Let me a second to scroll here.
What was it, like 4?
No, it's 17.0. So that's like,
that's a lot better than I thought.
Oh, yeah, this year is 11.6, which is
which is
not good. And even when Derrick Rose was a healthy player playing on a very good defensive Bulls team, he was still not a positive in that way. Defense has never been, you know, has never been something he was good at. And again, to your point, what does this team need? 3-point shooting and defense. We just talked about, however, the past month, the Wolves are the second best offense in the NBA. And for the season as a whole, they're the third best offense in the NBA. They don't need another offensive player. They need a role player. They need like a Marcus Georges Hunt, like on steroids. And that's not what Derrick Rose is. There could be other buyout guys, though. There could be other buyout guys that could come in. There's one open roster spot now. We don't know if Shabazz is going to get bought out or what's going to happen there. So
there's definitely other guys that could be talked into. Yeah. There's other guys that could be talked into. I never said the Wolves shouldn't sign anybody, but do not touch Derrick Rose. Don't do it.
I'm with you. I'm with you. That's
oh Lord.
If it were me, I wouldn't, but
hey, like I said, if they sign him, please come find me and help me. Give me some help.
Let's just remember, Tibbs is smarter than us.
He is
smarter than us.
He is, but he's also a human. He's also a human, and that's what scares me.
Right, and he just does have a him and Rose are very close. They're when Derrick Rose was in town for when the Cavs were here, Tibbs and Rose met in Tibbs's office for like an hour, and I don't think that was necessarily specifically about joining the Wolves or anything.
It's just because he really likes him.
He really likes him, and maybe he's concerned about him personally. I think Derrick Rose has clearly been going through some off-court issues in his life. So I don't know. I don't know what Tibbs is trying to give him other than support. I just really hope it doesn't come at the cost of Tyus Jones' minutes and Jeff Teague's minutes and the effectiveness of the offense.
That's it for us. We went a little long today. We went a little long today, but we had a ton to cover. Lots of trade deadline stuff. Lots of Timberwolves basketball that happened over the weekend. I cannot take any more Derrick Rose stuff. I will literally break down in class and start yelling at people. It's not good for my health. It's not good for my health. I got to watch my blood pressure. It's not good for me. But thank you, Dane, for coming on. As always, it was a great show.
It was. I just stay off Twitter this afternoon then, because you might lose it, Colton.
I know. I'm just trying to keep it together. I'm just trying to do my homework. That's me. This is a responsible Molesky. This is a responsible Colt Molesky. And thank you all for listening to another Locked On Wolves podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.
You are Locked On Timberwolves, your daily Minnesota Timberwolves podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.